Hiya.
Hello there, my name is Brian.
Right, where were you born, Brian?
I was born and bred in St Helens, where I still live.
So. Right. Okay, when was that? When
1947.
Born? Right, and what did your parents do for a living?
My dad was a welder, and my mum was what she called a shorthand typist, and I don't know what they call them nowadays. They have PA or something.
And where did you go to school then, Brian?
Went to school in St Helens, went to the local junior school, grammar school, university in St Andrews, and then came back to St Helens.
Right. So, how long were you supported Everton then?
I didn't used to support anybody really. I used to, as a young lad, like 12, 13, I used to go to Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Everton. Liverpool were in the second division then, and they were a kick and rush team, which is what they still are. But I went to first Goodison game was 1960. And they'd just signed Alex Young, and they'd been getting the team together with Bobby Collins and all that lot. And I just, and I went to any other team after that. It was Alex Young really, because I was a young kid and I was impressed by what he could do, you know, with the ball. And so I went to Everton from then on.
Okay, well, what do you remember of that first game?
Oh, it was. I mean, I didn't even know the names of the Everton players. I didn't even have a programme. And it was West Ham, and they had a young lad called Jeff Hurston, and he impressed me more than anybody. I'd never heard of Jeff Hurston, even though I was a football fan. Martin Peters was in the same team. And I went to school on the Monday and said, there were two belting players for West Ham, you know. And I said, there was a player for Everton, number nine. And my mate said, Young. He said, well, I said, how old he was, you know, because I didn't even know names. But I just remember it was a great game of football. And this player, number nine, sort of said, I want to go back to Everton. Never met Everton. But the game was... But the thing I remember most was Jeff Hurst, who nobody... Alf Ramsey had come on the scene, put him in the England team. But he was a tremendous centre-forward as he played in those days.
So you weren't tempted to become a West Ham fan then?
No, my mother's from Walthamstow, but I couldn't really be bothered going down there every week.
Was there any connection with Everton in your family?
None at all. With it being St Helens, there's a lot of connection with rugby league, which I used to go to rugby league as well on the midweek matches. My dad was a keen cricket fan, played and watched it, but really none of the family had any connection. My granddad was a Tottenham fan because he was from London, and I wasn't even really sure who I wanted to support. It was just that match, West Ham, Alex Young. Enjoyed it. I went ever since.
So remind me, what season was that? And
1960.
How old
I would
were
be 13.
You? 13.
I just started playing football. I wasn't really aware of any football teams, but I was enjoying watching football because there was not much on the television, if any. Mm. There was nothing. The only things you could see was Pathé News on the cinema, and we used to go there and watch Pathé News for the one game that Pathé News. You know, there was no football really. You could see except live. Dead cheap though.
What do you remember about the ground at the time?
it was standing, you know, standing only. And I foolishly used to sometimes go in the boys' pen, which is in the corner of Gladys Street, and it was 1 shillings or 5p to go in there rather than 3 shillings or 15p to go into the ground. But I always paid 15p. That boys' pen was nuts. You know, it had all the scallies of Liverpool in there, with knives, taking money off you, blackmail. It was the ground itself. It always had atmosphere. It was always standing. And I remember just after I started going, they threatened to close the ground down for vandalism, because they were throwing stuff at the players, and they built a sort of semicircle behind each couple, so that that was what was out of throwing distance for pennies and things to hit people, and there was. It's noticed all over Goodison saying if it continues, the matches will be played behind closed doors. But the ground itself isn't much different underneath, although they've got the new stands. You go to Gladys Street and it's just the same. The toilets are no better, the food's no better. But there was always an atmosphere, and especially when you have a big match. And crushes, they said 72,000 hours in a month. I think it was Inter Milan. Some on the foreign team, when we really got into. And it was absolutely, you talk about Hillsborough, you can see how it happened. People were just being, there was more than seven, people were letting people in, throw them a pound note and they let you over the thing. It was awful on a big match. It was just packed.
Do you remember how much it cost in those days?
Yeah, it was 3 shillings, which is it was about a pint and a half. In pint was 2 shillings or 10p, 15 pence. So you talk like a pint and a half now, let's say six or seven quid at max to go in. And it didn't seem very much. My mum used to give me to spend. And that was the same all over the country. You know, I used to, when I got to Dundee, you could see Dundee from St Andrews. Went to Spurs when I was at my granddad's. And it was affordable, you know. It was an affordable for the young lad to go. But that's how I do it. I just equate it with pints. Now, that might not be a very good... But the only thing I would say is that rugby league has kept that sort of standard. You can go to a rugby league match now for £9 at first. All right, it's not the Premiership, but they've kept the standard cost the same as it was in 1960, if you like.
You mentioned that you were attracted to Everton by Alec Young. Is he still your favourite player of all time?
Yes, I mean, there weren't many skilled... I like skilled players, you know, but I also... he's probably my favourite player because I was a young... and he was the man I watched and I just thought he was... I mean, he was 5'7.5" or something. He could outleap 6 foot centre halves. He scored some belting goals. He nodded him down to Roy Vernon. But he also floated. He just floated along and then just went past players. Had a tremendous shot in both feet. Not very fast. Favourite player of all time, I don't know. I think Colin Harvey comes very close to that as well. Because he's called the English Pele and he could just shimmy his hips and leave players just on the floor and not having moved.
You know. So what year was Colin Harvey in the team?
Colin came in soon after that, actually. He came as a very young player. First game was at in Milan, if I remember rightly, away. And he was in the next successful team, if you like, Kendall Harvey and Bob. He came as a very young lad, and he wasn't very popular at first. Because, a bit like Dennis Stevens, he came in, he wasn't very popular. Nobody realised what he was doing. You know, Dennis Stevens was a holding player. Nobody ever heard of a holding player before. And he'd be, get on, yeah, get moving, will you lazy, you know this. Harvey came in, he was a young lad, he was learning the game. But gradually, I mean, after about 3 years, he was just a hero. I mean, he's still one of the greatest footballers. Why he didn't play for England more, I don't know. I just don't know. But the players, my eldest son's named after Andy King. He's not great in the annals of Everton's history, but he was a great tryer, he always went forward and backed some great goals. That was in 78, my son was born. Peter Eastall, the next son's called after Peter Eastall. I don't mean Peter Eastall Burrows, I mean Peter. Yeah. And he wasn't with us long, but he was skillful. Duncan McKenzie, I just loved that man when he got the ball. He was a lazy player, Duncan McKenzie, really. But he did some things, and he just changed it. It gave you something to laugh at when he leaves somebody sprawled all over the floor. You know, it just gave you a bit of... Gordon, these teams are not the best in the world. And he just gave you a bit of light relief. But I think Duncan Ferguson comes up there as well. Tremendously skillful with his feet, as you know. With his head, yeah. And I used to like the rough stuff he gave out. I went to one of his last games against Man United a few seasons ago, night game. And he was playing it through off Ferdinand, and you could tell when Duncan was up for it. You know, he just had that look about him from the moment. And I remember everybody looking that way, and the next thing Ferdinand's on the floor with a broken nose. You know, and that's what I thought Duncan. Not skillful, but he's also hard as nails. And I shut up now because it was a good question. But I remember seeing Gary Neville, who was foolish. He hadn't said he hated Scousers, and he was running towards the paddock, and I was in the paddock, and he looked behind him and Ferguson was coming up behind him, and you could see fear on his face. It was because Ferguson was going to get him. He was going to do something to him, and he just kicked the ball into touch. He just wasn't and ran off. He wasn't good anywhere near Ferguson, and he was great. And in the present team, I think strange for all those other players, Tim Howard. Yeah, it's strange to say that. You know, you've got Arteta and Pienaar and Kane, but to me, I believe what Clough said, that I mean Neville Southall saved it, was as valuable as anybody else. And I think Howard's as valuable as any scorer, because he saves at least 2 goals a match. You know, even though he does odd every now and again. But to me, he's worth 2 goals a match. And Brian Clough always said that. The first thing you always do is sign a good goalkeeper. You know? And so if you answer your question, Alex Young, yes, probably still is my favourite player. But there's been lots through the years I've sort of admired as much. You know?
So who do you rate your best goalkeeper in your time?
Oh, Southall, yeah. I mean, Gordon West, he was good. But Southall was consistently... brilliant. I mean, he was just Howard's good, but Nigel Martin was good, you know. But we've had some plonkers as well. But Richard Wright, he was worth two goals to the side, that man, you know, if he was playing. But yeah, I think Southall over the years. Gordon West was good, but I still think Southall was all round the better goalkeeper for every shot stoppers. And I mean, West could save, make tremendous dive and flicks, and, but Southall was just everything. He could stop, shot stop, save, you know. Yeah, I think Southall.
Do you still go to the game regularly?
Not regularly, no, about three times a year. It's 31 quid. I retired in 2007, and if I made it a priority, I would do it. But we know there's a few of us go, and I go one when my mate's son's not going. It works out. I pay three times and go about three other times for nothing because my mate's son can't always make it with his season ticket. But I try and get to at least one night match a season because I think they're great for atmosphere.
Why do you think the atmosphere is better then?
I have no idea. We've often talked about this. We don't know why, but there's so much more. It rocks. If you get a good match against Man United, night match, it rocks. The place just, it's worth going just for that one scene. But no, I don't go regularly. I mean, I think they priced out families and not pensioners because I could make it a priority, my spending. You know, if I get a season ticket, £300. But the other thing is, when I was sort of going regularly, you get into a habit of doing it. Now, if you don't get into that habit, you've lost it, and it's. I mean, friends of mine still go. Two of my friends regularly go every. They've got season tickets, and they made it a priority to go. So I could get with the car with them, but I haven't made it a priority. I just.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just going back to players. Have you ever met a player?
No, not till joined this collection. Oh, I tell a lie. I met Tony Kaye in Sheffield Station. We went to Sheffield Wednesday to watch him, and me and my mate, we went by train, and Tony Kaye came in. Now, why he wasn't with the other team, I don't know why, I have no idea, but he was on his own. And he came across and said, "Hey, lads, give us a £10 note." This was in 1960. "Just go and get us a ticket for Leeds, will you?" So my mate ran off, you see, and he comes back, and he's like £1.17 or something. So he had about £8 left. Tony said, "Keep that." Well, we couldn't believe it, you know. He's probably just throwing the match.
Could you just explain what you mean by that?
Well, he got suspended for taking bribes and putting bets on. There was him, Bronco Lane, and a few other players at the time.
Was this while he was at Everton?
Well, it was while he was at Chef Wednesday, but it went, by the time he got to Everton, that's when he was exposed. And I forget the exact details. But he was the same because he was a cracking player. And the match that he was exposed for, he was man of the match. So it didn't make sense that, you know, he'd thrown that match. Because he can't be man of the match and... But he finished his career, it's a hell of a shame. Because I think he'd have been one of England's best by the time he matured. And, I George Telfer, I used to teach. And when I first started teaching in 1971, I never met him because he was in the same school, but I never taught him. And the teacher who took our football team said, "Got a cracking player. I'm going to recommend to Evan, George Telfer." And I never saw him play, but I saw him in the distance. But the girls loved him because he was George Telfer, you know. He was going to be, and he did. Eddie Haywood, who was a teacher, recommended to Evan. They came and watched him, signed him on, and he had a few good seasons with us. But I think, you know, he wasn't. He was fast, he could shoot, but he didn't have a good football brain, if you know what I mean. All he had to do was run and shoot, whereas for the Premiership, I think you need a good football brain as well. But no, I've never met a player till I joined this, and then...
So if you were given the opportunity to meet a player now, past or present, who would it be? And what would you like to ask him?
Ooh, it's a hard one, that one. I think it would be somebody like Duncan Ferguson, you know, because I think he's articulate, Duncan, as well. And I'd ask him, you know, why did you thump players? Why did you thump players? I mean, was it because, I mean, Graham Sharp said when he did his talk that Kenny Burns, he's playing against Kenny Burns, and he said to him, "You're my hero, Kenny." And Kenny Burns says something like, "That's good because I'm going to break your leg in 2 minutes." And is it this sort of banter between defender, you've got to get your first punch in first, you know? Because Graham Sharp was saying his brother played for Rangers. And didn't make the grade, only played one game because it wasn't aggressive enough. And I would ask Duncan, who's not an aggressive man, he had pigeon, but he is. He's very aggressive. But why did he thump people? Was it to get the first punch in, or was that part of his game? Because he didn't need it, he was skillful enough, you know? So I think that's the one I'd like to meet, I think.
Okay. What do you think was your most memorable Everton match then?
The one I didn't go to, that was 1966 Wembley Cup final.
Why did you not manage to go?
Well, I was in Scotland at the time, and it was right in the middle of my university exams, second year. And the Scots didn't show the FA Cup final because they were showing their own FA Cup on the same day. And I had an uncle who was a vicar in Newcastle, and I managed to get down to that match to watch it on his telly, on English telly. And he came in and he said, "How are they doing, my son?" Because our vicar's talk. And I said, "The 2-0 down." He said, "I'll go and say a little prayer for you." I thought, "Oh, yeah." Anyway, he came back in and said 3-2. He said, "The prayer worked." So, but that was my most memorable. I mean, that game was just Derek Temple's game at the end. You know, that really, that goal at the end, that was just tremendous. The best match I think I enjoyed recently was that one I was talking about, the night match against United when we won 1-0 header with, and somehow that was, even though that was only a few years back to me.
Whose header was it?
Duncan's. He did a flying header. And I remember, I said to him, "Mate, he's offside," and he wasn't when the replay came, you know. It was just that's, I think, because United at that time, say 3 or 4 years ago, had such a big opinion of themselves, which they have. You know, we had the greatest football team in the world. They come to Goodison and they get bladdered 1-0. They were outplayed, you know. And I think that's why. I think I'm not really anti Liverpool, to be quite honest. I think my generation aren't. You know, I think we used to go to the match, Liverpool Everton, even though we might say Liverpool, we weren't support. We support them, but not like, you know, we just watch the match. But I know a lot of younger people, certainly even the 40s, 50s, are really anti-Liverpool.
Why do you think that is?
They say it's because of Heysel, and that stopped the 1984-5 team getting into Europe, and the team split up, and that was Liverpool's fault. That's what our caretaker, when I was at school, used to say. He was 50. "Oh, yeah, it's not there. We've been the champions of Europe for them, you know." And that's why he just can't stand them. I supported it on the telly against a foreign team.
You know,
I still support Liverpool
when they're playing a team other than Everton.
Yeah. Well, no, not especially when they're playing Man United. You know what I mean? Scum. But if they're playing in Europe, I'll support them because they're a local team as far as I'm concerned. But that's not shared by many people. A lot of people my age group say that, but a lot of people, even a little bit younger, just have no time for Liverpool at all.
Nevertheless, the Derby game is the biggest game of the season.
Is.
So what does it mean to win the Derby match?
Oh, it's everything for the rest of the season. Because the Liverpool fans will never let you forget it if you lost. So, that and Man United, the two of the games I want to win. You know, I want to really bury Liverpool. I really want to bury Man United. Because if you lose to Liverpool, then instant talent, there's four men, not many people support Wigan. There's Man United, City, Everton and Liverpool. You go in a pub, there's usually one of each in there, and they will not let you forget. So yeah, you've got to beat Liverpool.
So what's the most memorable Derby match that you can remember?
Oh dear me, there's been so many. The one with the disallowed goal, who's that was? That was, which one was that? That was a cup game, wasn't it? I can't remember that. There's been so many memorable Derby games, you know what I mean? And
well, the best moment in the Derby game, the worst moment in Derby game.
I think the best moment was when Duncan McKenzie left Tommy Smith on his arse by just dumbing him. That, to me, was the best thing I've seen, you know, because Smith had been calling McKenzie saying, "Oh, he's fancy down, he's no good, he just doesn't know what to do with the ball, he's not a real footballer and all this." And the first time he came to Smith, he put it through his legs and left him on his bum, and I thought, yes! It's that sort of incident. I like, the result's important, but it's just...
So the memory is as important as the result?
Yeah, after time, yeah. That little tiny incident was important. Tommy Smith, Ronnie Goodless, I met him on Friday at this dinner, and he was saying Tommy Smith, in the first 10 minutes, tried to cripple him 6 times. Now, and I said to Ronnie Goodless, "Do you think that's, you know... think you'd have made it in the modern game?" He said, "Oh, yeah." He was a tremendous pass to the ball. I don't remember this about Smith. I just remember me, the thug. He was a tremendous pass to the ball. He would have made it. He just had to modify his game, you know. So the result's important, but that Dicklin's just like that. I remember more than, you know, the particular games, you know.
Okay. So what do you think your worst moment following Everton's been?
When we nearly went down.
What year was that?
Oh, was it 92, 93? When we had to win at home. And that, who was that Italian who gave, didn't score? You won't remember this, because I can only, it's coming back to me on the telly now. And he's straight through on goal and didn't score. Purposely, I don't know why, I'm sure he bent or something. No, that's one of the worst ones. I think, but we didn't go down, and the worst moment other than that was when Gordon Lee was managing. I mean, that was pretty dire time in the world.
When was that?
That was just before, that was when Duncan McKenzie was with us, so it'd be 70s, early 80s possibly.
What was particularly bad about that era then?
He was a player he thought were class. I mean, I know David Moyes like hard-working players, but they're hard-working, skillful players, a lot of them, you know. He had people like Brett Angel at centre forward instead of Duncan McKenzie. Brett Angel he was an ape on legs, you know. And he was saying he was a good player, Brett Angel. And his whole team was, he had a good time at Newcastle. Good manager. If you read Wikipedia, I'm sure he wrote his entry in Wikipedia, because it says what a good team he had at Goodison and how entertaining they were. They were dire. You didn't want to go. You thought, oh, it was so boring and workmanlike, but not many skillful players. Duncan McKenzie had just been signed by Bingham, I think, and he replaced Bingham. And Bingham had some good teams. And McKenzie said he knew his time was up when Brett Angel got in the team before he did, you know. But they were probably the worst times, you know.
So I know you don't like Gordon Lee, but who was your favourite Everton manager then?
Well, there's so many. It's got to be Catterick. He was an Evertonian through and through. You've got to have Howard Kendall, no matter how drunk he was, you know. But I mean, somebody said even that. I mean, who was it? Gary Speed. That's why I left Everton. He said he was on the coach, and Kendall just gave him the sort of team sheet. He said, pick me a team, you know. But it's got to be Catterick, Kendall, Moyes, who's done such a good job with a limited budget.
How do you rate Moyes compared with the other two?
Not very much, but I think he's done a good job. But the other two had different parameters, really. I mean, Catterick had as much money as he wanted when we were with the Millionaires team, John Moore, so he could buy whoever he wanted. And he did a good job. He bought good players and gelled them together. But he also bought people like Derek Templin, who had been playing pretty crap in the reserves at centre-forward, and put him on the wing. And it was a great success. So he was a good manager. Kendall, again, had money, and he knew players. He brought people like Adrian Heath, Gary Steen. He watched players in the lower divisions, and he knew who he wanted. He got them for bargain prices, a bit like Moyes does now. So you could say that if Moyes had more money, it'd be easier to compare. I think Moyes is a good manager with the money he's got. I think he's building a good team, but we were never a selling team under Catterick and Kendall. I mean, I don't think we can keep Pienaar. I don't think we can keep Rodwell, to be quite honest. I mean, I know Moyes is bumming Rodwell up now to get the price up, I think, because he knows he's such a class young player. And we're a selling team, and that's unfair on Moyes, really. You know what I mean?
Why have we become a selling team then?
Because we don't want to win debt the way that United and Liverpool, you know. Ken Wright is a good man for saying we're not going to go crazy.
But weren't Everton known as the Millionaires Club at one time?
John Moores was Lord Grantchester's grandfather. The Moores family backed Goodison. John Moores didn't give them the money. He lent the money interest free, which is a good thing, you know. And then the Moores family buggered off to Liverpool, except for Lord Grantchester, who's still there. But it wasn't the same. I mean, there were no Man Cities and Chelsea's. You didn't have these. I mean, even John Moores didn't go crazy, you know. I mean, we used to buy anybody we wanted, but not at the prices that they're talking about now, you know. But I think Moyes, yes, he's done a good job, and as soon as he gets a team that looks good, somebody has to be. Gravesen had to go to Real Madrid. Now, he was a great, but when he came back, he was obviously injured. But he had to sell some of the pivotal players to keep themselves going, and he's bringing people through. And I think if Colin Harvey and that sort of crew can look out for young players, I mean, then we can keep going that way. But whether we'll ever really do anything, we're too dependent on Arteta, and we're too dependent on certain Cahill. We're too dependent on certain players, basically.
But why do you think Everton's not kept pace financially with other teams, apart from the fact that other teams may have a benefactor? Has the club been badly run?
I don't know. I mean, yes, people say it has. They say, was it Peter Johnson, the guy from the World? People say yes. I mean, the 1990s and that sort of era, it was badly run, and it was a bit like Liverpool now. It was bought by somebody who didn't care about the club, you know. But I don't know the full details. It'd be interesting to see when somebody writes a book on exactly what's been going on behind the scenes. I think Ken Wright came along, loved the club, had his stability. But always going to be top half table unless some medicals happen. Unless they bring in what they're talking about now, where you can't have more than certain amount of wages and players. If the financial side of it goes and Sky's got to sell off its rights to other people. Although I see the Premiership are fighting that in the law court, saying they've no right to say they need the money as much as Sky want to give them the money. But that's the only way it's going to happen, isn't it? If you start limiting and restricting the amount of money, one, you can spend, two, you can pay in wages. I mean, they're offering Rooney 160,000 a week at United now, which bursts even Cristiano Ronaldo's at Real Madrid, you know, just to keep him at United. Now, that's a lot of money for a guy who's skillful, but it's a lot of money. And Everton would never play that. That's the other side. If they get a player like Rodwell, who turned out to be a star, he's not going to. I wouldn't stay. Even if I was, you know, somebody, it'd be nice to come and say, I'll give you 160,000 rather than 80,000. I said, yeah, I'm coming to you. Yeah.
So you think football's too commercial?
I think it's always been commercial, to be quite honest. I think it's always been a commercial. I think nowadays it's just got to the point where to succeed, you've got to have money. I mean, I think Everton's run commercially, in the sense they're trying to keep it. But I mean, yeah, the price of programmes. I mean, I know I'm old git, and I'm just being that, you know, grumpy old git. But I do think some of the things you go for the hot dog. I mean, if you took a family, I mean, I used to take my kids. Well, they didn't like it actually. They never took to football. They used to ask at half time, could they go home? So I stopped going. But I mean, for a family with two kids, say, to buy a hot dog and a Bovril, and it's a lot of money, you know. And I don't know where the money goes. I know it goes in wages, but what the sponsorship to pay? It's always been commercial, but I think it's going to ruin itself if it doesn't.
What do you think the modern day footballer is like compared with the footballer of the 60s?
Being skills wise, or just
skills wise and earning capacity, attitude to the game.
I quite say hard on that. I mean, I think skills wise, I think actually the footballers today have probably got more skill, but you can't tell because the ball. I mean, the ball now, they played with a lump of lead in the old days, you know. But I think some players would come through from the 60s and some players could go back to the 60s and 70s and still be as good. Attitude to the game, I have to say, there's always some, I mean, always some, we won't mention their names, some lads who were, you know, just as bad as John Terry. And in fact, I've heard many stories, which I can only repeat on this, about some of the teams in the past. I mean, Graham Sharp was talking, said he couldn't tell half the things that went on in that team because it was too young an audience. I think they're all winners. I think they've always, football, to be a professional footballer, you've got to be a winner. And I think that's always been the case. Skills-wise, I think it's tremendous skill. I mean, I would actually say there's more skillful players now. But it's in the sense that they go right through the team. You know, like the total football of Holland seems to affect the whole game. So you've got full-backs, centre-halves, wing-halves, whatever you call them now. I mean, they're all skillful. You don't get as many sort of... We used to have some real... I mean, George Thompson, tremendous full-back, but he was a killer. Even Pat Van Den Howe in that team, he was a killer. You know, there's always been a killer, but... Yeah, I think even the I would say the skill's probably higher now. But you've got more foreigners coming in. But it goes right through the team, you know, that's what's different from when I mean, we used to have two full-backs, they were stoppers. You might have one who was an overlapper. You had three half-backs, One was a stopper, one was an attacking half back, one was a defensive half back. Two wingers, inside forward, centre forward, inside. And the forwards were the skillful ones. You had occasional midfielders, but basically it was a lot more of a stopping game. But then you saw the England team 1966, that the skill in that team went right the way through. That's what Ramsey did, you know, it went, I mean, from Ray Wilson forward, it was just, I mean, yeah, it's very hard on that one. And I asked this, I asked a footballer who turned up here once in the office, and asked him, and he said, no, he said, you know, he said he couldn't answer that, really. But there's some, he reckons that most players today could play in the past, and most players in the past could play now, if we just a few adaptations.
So, while allowing for time differences and different standards of play, which would you say was the best Everton team you've seen?
Well, it's hard, but I would say the 1980s team was. It was the 1960s team was a good team, and you knew they'd win at home. They never lost at home. They didn't win many away. We used to. They never really tried away, you know what I mean? They knew in those days, if you won at home nearly every match in three away games, you'd win the championship. The 84 team, you knew they were going to win. They were winners from the...
What did they win, the 84?
They won the European Cup Winners' Cup and the FA Cup. And they were skillful right the way through, as I was saying before. They were right the way through. But you knew they were going to win. I mean, they were doing nothing. And then Andy Gray came at the end of his career, and he was a catalyst. He just led that team so well. You know, Graham Sharp said, you know, once he came, you weren't going to lose. I mean, the man was put into a bath of ice. They called him the Iceman. They put him in a bath of ice before the game to get his swellings down. He played a game, they put him back in the ice, you know. But he was such a winner, you know.
So where do you think the current team would, how would they compete against?
They're good.
The 80s team?
They're good, yeah. I think they just lack... They've not got that belief that the 80s team had. The 80s team, if you read the books and talk to players, they were never going to lose. You know, if they were 3-0 down, they'd win 4-3. They knew they were winners. This team generally has got a good attitude. They go to the end. But you don't get the feeling they've got that much belief, you know, as much as the 80s. And that's probably the difference. Not the skill, but the actual belief that we are going to win, you know. And if Arteta or Cahill is not playing, that's where the belief seems to go, if they're relying on Osman or somebody. I like Osman, but when I was teaching, when I retired 2.5 years ago, a lot of the kids couldn't stand him. Oh, let's get rid of him if we're going to be anything, you know. And I think he's a hard worker, little demon, you know, but they had no time for him, you know. But that's I couldn't, you can't really compare, but I would say, yeah, this team is good. I think the 60s team, it was completely different.
What did they win in the 60s?
They won the championship, the FA Cup. And then in 1970, a slightly different team won the championship again. But it's a different style of football. You know, it was a different parade. I mean, as I say, if you won all your home games, three away games, you won the championship. Now, you wouldn't do that now. I mean, like the Chelsea United are going for every match.
Did you go to any away matches?
Yeah, I went to a few, yeah. When I was at school, I went to a lot. There was a coach firm in St Helens that actually ran coached trips to the away matches, but we didn't go on there because they were quite expensive. But if you went on the train half as a kid, even if you weren't, you know, I never looked my age. I do now, but didn't then. And you could get on the train, get there, but the only thing was, people talk about hooliganism. Unless a few of you went, it was very. You didn't open your mouth because it was very. It could be very, very. Intimidated. Birmingham was a place. I remember running down Birmingham's main street and nobody was stopping. There were about seven of us legging it. And there were about, we said there were hundreds, but there weren't. But there were a lot of Birmingham fans. And it's strange that my friend's son went recently to Birmingham. I said, it's not much better now. The Birmingham fans are loonies, you know. And that was the trouble. The United was all right. United was a friendly enough place to go. Liverpool was obviously a good laugh. Went to Sheffield, went to Newcastle. Went to London, to Tottenham, to Arsenal. It was a day out. It was a weekend out in many cases. When I went to London, we stayed at my grandma's. And went to Sunderland. Sunderland, winter game. And in those days, they put straw on the pitch. And
why was that?
Because there was no underground heating, underside heating, so it kept the ground warm. It sounds daft, and it's straw keeping the ground warm. And then before the match, he put it all around this side, but it was packed. He had this massive cop at Sunderland in those days, the old Roker Park. And we were like this. And they're passing people down over their heads onto the straw, because my mate Kez, he collapsed, he'd gone, pass him down. And they put him on this straw, and then some wag lights a match and sets fire to the straw. And the St John's ambulance stopped the game, and they're pulling people off the straw, you see. But that was on the Pathé News the week after, and it's still on the web now. If you look at Pathé News, or Everton, Sunderland, it's still there. You can see the clouds of smoke as they're pulling these people off. It went all over the place. Barnsley, it was just, if you get a gang of you together, it was a good laugh, you know what I mean?
What was your favourite away ground?
Favourite away ground was United at Old Trafford. That's just magnificent now. But even in those days, it was because it was only built after the war, it was streets ahead of every other ground, you know. So I think, yeah, it was Old Trafford. It's always been streets ahead of, as a ground. I mean, why they pulled it down, I don't know, I went to see Bruce Springsteen at the new Old Trafford. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And if I hadn't been to Wembley, you know, and I just want to see it, because if Wembley's worse than the United, it's just a magnificent ground. And I want Everton to get a ground that's equally sort of, it's glorious.
Come on to grounds in a minute. Where's the furthest you've been on an away match?
I suppose London or Newcastle.
Not been on any European tours?
No, never have, no. A lot of my mates went, but I've never been on them. I had two kids, and if my kids had left home and it was now, I'd do the European tours, and I might do the European tours. There's a friend of mine, his son books the matches, and I've got no responsibilities now. I can go, and that would be, I'd love to go to Europe, yeah, and see them. I mean, apparently the fans are tremendous when you go abroad. My son Andrew says, oh, they're great, they make you feel welcome, they give you a drink, and you know. So yes, I might go, if they get into Europe, it won't be next year or the year after, I might start going to Europe again.
When you've not been able to get to a match, what's the most unusual thing you've done to get the result, or see the match, listen to the match?
Only the one at 1966, when I couldn't get down from Scotland. I had to get to Newcastle and watch it there. But I think that's about the only thing I've ever done that's you know, I've put myself out for. I mean, what I can't get over is the results of the match now. When I used to go from St Helens on a coach, on a train, I get to Goodison, watch the match, get back to St Helens at 5, 6 o'clock on the train, and the pink was out. They had the pink echo out with the result and the match report on, and that was 50 minutes after, and this was before computers. They had them, sometimes it was not up to date because they had extra time or something. But the speed which got that pink out was incredible.
Just explain again, what was the Liverpool pink?
His Echo Pink was a football paper that was every Saturday evening. And it had Liverpool Everton results, Liverpool reserves, Everton reserves, lots of news inside. It was a great paper for a football fan, if you're an Everton or a Liverpool fan. And the match report was on for both matches, Liverpool and Everton. And it was an institution, even in St Helens, because it sort of... Everton and Liverpool both rushed down to Town Hall Square to buy that, to find out the match. If they hadn't get to a match, then you get the pink instead. Because there was no TV, FA Cup final if you're lucky. And that's the big difference. You don't have to do as much nowadays.
So how do you get the result now if you don't go to the game?
I've got a mate called Dermot who keeps texting me, he's a pain. And he's in Gladys Street. I don't need it, because you can watch teletext, or you can get it on the, you can watch it blow by blow on the web on the BBC site. If you plug that in your telly, you can watch it, you know, that sort of thing. Or you put the radio on, that's the best way. Put radio on Merseyside over, and you get, but it's very biased that, but then that's all right. You know?
Do you think it's affected attendances then, the ease with which you can watch matches? And...
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. If I couldn't, yeah, it might have done. Certainly, it's... You couldn't watch it. As I said before, the only way you could watch a football match was to go to it live. But it was cheap as well, and I think the big thing, talking to people my age group, is the cost. We used to have a volunteer here who, he said they priced him out of it, and even though he could afford it, he felt he didn't want to pay it. He didn't want to pay 31 quid. I used to get tickets for 10 quid when I was teaching. They used to send them out to the schools, were restricted views. You couldn't see the, that's the main stand at all. And you can't see the pitch. You can't see the wings. You've got to watch on the telly. And I think it possibly that, yeah, it's taking the appetite out of people going, because they can watch on Match of the Day, or if they go to the pub, watch on Sky, which is some of them want to do. If Everton's playing and they're on Sky, go to the local pub and have a couple of pints and watch it there, you know.
So what's the average attendance at Everton now?
It's about 34, isn't it? 34, 30.
And what was that like compared with your...
Well,
earlier days?
You always got 50,000. You always got 50,000. You know, never less than 45. But it was all standing, and they weren't accurate figures, because you could just... I've seen people slipping the gatekeeper, you know, a five or a quid or something into a big match. But you know, 50,000, you'd expect. I mean, that is to be heaving. And the difference between the stand prices, it was £3 to go in the ground, but it's only something like £6 to get a seat in the main, in one of the stands. You know, so it's, the whole thing was much more affordable, which I think is possibly why attendances are dropping. Not a place like United, but then they say they're all eating salmon, and you know, they've got 200 boxes there for corporate hosting.
You mentioned the ground before. What could Everton do then to improve the ground? Because you said basically it's the same as it was when you used to go.
I mean, toilet facilities and that sort of thing. I mean, they're still as disgusting as ever. You know, if you wanted a number two, you would not go and do it in that toilet. You know, you have to be desperate. They're sorted. It's that side of things. If you're going to pay 30 odd quid or 40, 50 quid, you want to be able to go to the toilet. You want to get a decent, somewhere to sit with a pint, not stand around, and, you know. That's what people my age want, a bit of comfort, you know. And it's the comfort side. You go to Man United, they're selling wine by the... you know, I mean, they're selling wine. I don't wine, but it's just... it's not moved on hospitality for the fans. Never mind hospitality for the corporations. It's not moved on for the normal feet fan who just wants a bit of comfort.
So can Everton actually redevelop the ground?
I think they could, yeah. With a bit of... Yeah, I mean, a friend of mine... Boy, it's one of the ideas he came up with. He went to watch. He's a St Johnstone fan, and he went to. They got into Europe one year, a few years back. Everybody else, it was default. Everybody else either went bankrupt or. And he went to Monaco, and what they've done is they've gone down as well as up, so the ground is way way down there. Because they've not just said this is the flat. They said we'll go down there. And that, so in a very small area, they've got a massive stand. And I think Goodison could do that. You know, I think they could, you know, go down.
So would you rather do that than the move ground? The
thing is, it doesn't bother me. And this is the sacrilege of some people. I say this and they go, man, honest. You know? But if they could build it, I mean, United, not in Manchester. I mean, I'm from St Helens, so it's not the same. And I love Goodison, and it rocks, but it needs something doing to it. And if maybe when they develop it, it's not going to be the same anyway. You're not going to have the same acoustics. I was brought up when Kirby was part of Liverpool, Highton was part of Liverpool, Halewood part of Liverpool. And if you look at some of the visitors to the exhibition here, they put their addresses Halewood, Liverpool, Kirby, Liverpool. They don't consider themselves as part of Knowsley or Lancashire or whatever. And so it wouldn't matter to me, but to many people, it matters.
So why do you think it does matter so much that the ground remains within city boundaries?
I don't think it does, but to them it does, because it's a Liverpool club, and it's always been there, and we don't want to go to Knowsley. But that's their opinion. To me, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm from Stirling, so I shouldn't really have an opinion on this. It should be a scouser's opinion, you know. That's what they always say, you shut up. But it's split. It'd be. But if we can get a decent ground in Knowsley, then let's go. Because so many clubs have done it. I mean, Sunderland, United, they moved to Old Trafford. City, a lot of clubs are doing. Arsenal, they've all doing it. So, I mean, does it matter that much? But to some people, it does. Like sharing the ground. I wouldn't fancy sharing the ground with Liverpool.
Why not?
I wouldn't want to sit where somebody from Liverpool sat the week before. No, it wouldn't be the same. You've got to have your home. I know Inter Milan and Milan, I know it's done successfully all over the world, you know. But I personally, and don't ask me why, I haven't got a reason. Like, some people have got a reason why they don't want to leave. It's just a feeling, you know. Not rational. Football's not rational, is it?
No. So you'd be against a ground share then?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And what about the proposed move to Kirby then, the one that fell through? You were presumably
I was hoping, I was, yeah. And what gets me is, as I say, I'm not a scouser, therefore they tend to just shut up. But I think the thing is, if Bill Kenwright said it's the only way forward, and he's a businessman, he's a lifelong Evertonian. He loves Goodison. He's not, you know, it's not like it's some guys coming from Saudi Arabia and said, we're going to Kirby. This is an Evertonian through and through, says, we've got to go to Kirby, it's the only alternative.
Given the fact there is opposition to it, to a move on a ground share, do you think they'd keep the crowds they've got now?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it would be. Yeah, I don't think it's like the green and white of Man United. It's not, I don't think the opposition is that hard. I think they would. Yeah, I mean, even friends of mine. I said, "Would you?" I mean, Kirby'd be better for most of my St Helens mates, because it's only it's half the distance to Goodison, and the parking would be superb. And the parking at Goodison is disgusting. That's the other thing. The parking is disgusting. It's just, you park up side streets and people taking money off you to look after your car. Hey, we're not going to scratch it, you know. And it's not good. There are, this one guy opened up a lander. It's only the size of this room. He gets like 25 cars on there for £7 a time, which is all right. But no, I think they still would keep it. Yeah, I think they would. I think they would keep it. And it'd certainly be easier to get to. I can get on the trains for nothing. And they say use a soccer bus. It's not satisfactory after the match. Start it going back. It's not good. You know, you hit Lime Street with all the fans from the other side hit Lime Street, you know, and it's not good.
So, in what ways the match day experience changed for you then, over the years?
Well, it's more expensive. Sitting down, which I like, don't get me wrong, I'm not one of these who like go back to standing up, because it was bloody uncomfortable. And I've had my leg peed upon, as has many people. You talk to my age group. Somebody wants to wait, you're going to send 2,000. There's no way they're going to try and get to the toilet. They just do it, and sometimes it goes on the person behind side and so on. So it's better for sitting down-wise. But the food and that's not changed. Still crap. The beer's still expensive. Getting to the match is harder now, because there used to be a lot of coach firms did coaches to the match and would park up and wait for you to come out. And that made it easier if you didn't want to catch a train and that, especially when you got to 20s and 30s, in my 20s and 30s, it was easier to jump on up and you were back home in an hour. But less and less firms are doing, there's not in St Helens now. I think because the coach can be used so much more profitably for that afternoon, they're not going to have a coach lying there from 2 o'clock till 6 o'clock and it's you know, taking peanuts in. So they, obviously we go by car more now than we used to. Because there's more cars. Like in the 60s, there was one guy in our road had a car, Mr. Parker. And now, you know, everybody's got a car, so we do car sharing, park up. That's another thing. Coming out of the match, you've got a big queue of traffic. But the police are brilliant, though. I'd know they get rid of it so quickly. You know, they really do police it well, getting rid of the cars. But the food's not better. And the other things, half-time scores. They used to have them on the letters, they used to have all on the side, they had A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and that, and the programme told you that A was Liverpool versus Arsenal, B, and then a man would come along and put numbers to say what the half-time scores was. And that was an important part of the match. If you waited for the half-time scores to go up on the side, whereas now you can just get your mobile in or listen to your radio.
And because you're seated now, are you always able to sit with the people that you know?
No. No,
but, has that changed things?
That's changed things, but I never had a season ticket, but my mates got one, because I wasn't working, I was a student. They were working in the factories in St Helens, and they could afford to buy a season ticket, which wasn't dear. It was 21 times the price. It would be about £3, £21, 3 shillings times 20. Yeah, it was £3. You got your reserve match for nothing. So you're paying next to nothing. 20 times the cost of entrance, probably about £140 equivalent now. You got a season ticket for home and away, home and reserves. So I often, once I went to university, didn't sit with mates because they were working and they would be in the stands waving to me and I'd be glad to see. It didn't matter, because when you're in, it was very, if you're among Evertonians, you feel among friends anyway, you know, and it's you never feel bad. Nowadays, if I go, I'm usually sitting next to my mate because it's his son's ticket, or I'm nowhere near them coming up at the main stand or something. But that doesn't really bother me. I think that we meet up outside afterwards, and It doesn't really bother me, you know.
Do you have any match day rituals?
No, never did.
Never did.
No, none of us did, actually. No, there were certain people. I mean, one guy, he had... Phil Alcock, his name was. He had this pair of underpants. They were washed, but he washed them. He washed them every week and put them on every Saturday. And they were his lucky underpants. But I never had anything like that. No, not at all. I never even go for a drink before the match because, well, I got used to being on standing up. I wanted to go to the toilet. If you had a pint, you could not get out. And I never started drinking. I mean, a friend of mine, he still goes. He's got a season ticket for Gladys. He doesn't actually sit in it. He sits underneath. He stands underneath at the bar and drinks, and just watches on the screens. He says the match is crap. It's better just watching on the telly and having a pint. Gets away from his wife. She doesn't know. She thinks he's at the match. And he's, you know.
Unbelievable. So, Brian, for you, what does being an Evertonian represent then? What does it mean to be an Evertonian?
Well, a lover of true football. Unlike Liverpool, who've always been a bit kick and rush and a bit lackadaisical. United, who are full of themselves. But Evertonian is just... they've always tried to play good football, except under Gordon Lee. They've always been... I think if you talk to Evertonians, it's sort of... that it's, you know, you're in my heart, in my soul. That sounds corny. But if you're a fan of any football team, you just wanted them to win. You just want to carry on winning. You just want them to be great. And that's what any fan of any football team wants, really.
So Evertonians are not necessarily any more passionate or loyal than any other fans?
I don't think so, no. I don't think so. I mean, we're probably more... No, I don't think they are, really. You talk to Saints fans for rugby league and they're nuts. You know, they're nuts for St Helens rugby league, and I don't know why. I mean, but it's a different game, but they're passionate. You talk to Wigan fans and they're crackers. Went to one game last season at Wigan, and I was standing with the Evertonians, and that's one of the few away, that's the last away game I've ever been to, and they were throwing darts without feathers, without the from the stands, the season ticket holders were throwing. Luckily they weren't reaching, and some steward went in, and but the fans had said they're throwing darts, you know that was last season. I said to Max, I was at half time, I feared from even my eyesight, you know. So I think a lot of fanatics. I think Newcastle, Sunderland, they're all, you know, fanatics, and I'm just an Everton fanatic.
Can you tell me an Everton fact or story that some people won't have heard before?
I don't think I can. I remember asking that too when I was doing interviews. I couldn't think of any at all. No. Yeah. I was completely baffled by that one. No.
Well, I've come to the end of my list of questions, so is there anything else you'd like to add about being an Evertonian?
It's obvious, isn't it? It's just that one day they will reach the peak of they will win the European Cup, and I still want to be alive when that happens.
That's your ambition.
That's my ambition, to live to see them win the European Cup, yeah.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right, thanks very much for sharing your memories and experiences. It's been a pleasure. It's been fascinating. Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I never shut up, do I? Don't I?
You're all right. You're easy to interview because... The hardest bit is when you started asking me questions. There are a couple of times when I have to ask a question. I know the answer to it, but I think, well, will the person listening to it?
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. I
knew the football pink.
I know, of course you did.
Everything I asked you, I knew.
I know you did. It's whether the people listen.
It's like when you're talking about... Alec Young and the dart throwing incident. Remember all that.
I remember
the Duncan Ferguson goal against Man United. Yeah, I was there.
That rocked that night, didn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't that was a rock? That was. I loved that game. We had a fella. He was Australian. He was marrying a friend of mine's daughter, but he was like half Aboriginal, you know.
Yeah.
And he was all for Cahill. He was shouting, "Come on, Aussie boy!" I love it. I missed the match.
There's a few things. I mean, I didn't disagree with you on anything, except I probably would go for a ground share.
Would you?
Yeah, I can't believe it. My dad was a Liverpudlian, and I understand about you not wanting to sit in a seat that a Liverpudlian sat in, but it's the way football's going, economics.
I think that's it. I think it wasn't for the fans of Liverpool. Mm. I think both of the boards would say, let's go for it.
Oh,
it makes sense, doesn't it?
I can understand why they wouldn't, and I was anti-Kirby. But yeah, I'm sorry, but to me, Kirby just sounds too far. Like my dad was in a home shortly before he died, and he was in Hale Wood, and I hadn't realised that Hale Wood is now actually part of Knowsley.
Yeah.
I only knew that when he was ill. He used to take him to St Helens Hospital, what was it called?
Wiston.
Yeah. And not Liverpool. And I thought, that's stupid, because, you know, where he lived in near Hunts Cross, that's Liverpool. But Kirby definitely feels somewhere else.
See, it doesn't to me, because I'm from St Helens.
Yeah.
And my mate was from Everton, but he went in the 60s, they moved out to Kirby.
Yeah.
Because that was part of the overspill.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I taught in Knowsley for 37 years, and it's like, it felt like Liverpool. All the kids were scouts as far as they're concerned.
Oh, I know.
I
worked with a woman who was from Kirby, who was more scouse than a Liverpoolian.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? But just something about going, that stretch your motorway.
I know.
Because I go to away games, so I go to a lot of grounds where just no soul. Absolutely no soul at all. It's a purpose-built bowl on the outskirts of a town. I love going to Newcastle.
Yeah, that's
right. You spill out into the town centre afterwards.
Right by the river.
Right by the...
I know, it's brilliant.
I want us to move closer to the centre.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, I'm sure if they looked... There must be, I drive out to Liverpool sometimes. There's dereliction everywhere.
There's Gilmoss bus station's now a retail unit.
Exactly.
Why the hell do you need another retail unit?
I know, I agree with you. I mean, there must be places in Liverpool. There is so much dereliction, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, especially...
But it's Kirk the money, isn't it? It's the money.
What, the rates?
No, and, it's Tesco where one, you're going to find one. The money to build the ground.
Yeah,
if Tesco. You haven't got Tesco to help you.
Mm.
And... I think also, and this is just a personal opinion, I might be wrong, but I think football's like that in terms of revenue. It's maybe at the point where it's going to go like that.
Yeah.
And you don't know whether investing in a 70,000... I think Everton would sell a 60,000 grand.
See, that's my thing.
I think they would.
Yeah, I do.
Because I think if you get the pricing right, the people will come. You said, you know, about you not being able to go, because the price mainly... Well, I think if you... They're obstructed views. You just give them away for £10 at Everton. They fill them...
They do.
Just £1 off at the moment.
Is that all it is?
That's all it is, £1
off. Because we used to get letters at school saying, well, it was West Ham it was, in fact, the last one I went to before I retired. West Ham's coming up, it's a freezing cold day. Mm. And you can get £10 each.
Yeah.
I'll head a PE.
Yeah.
We'll have 30 for the coach.
Yeah.
You know? And the top corner is all our school and our kids. And some of them have never been to a match. Some of our kids were never talking to us. They've never been to a match.
And you've got
to
get the kids in because they're the future generations. Yeah. But I went to a game with my lad. My lad's 21 now, a committed blue. But it was Leighton Orient in the cup. We weren't doing very well. Gazza was in the team. It was an awful period. And they said £10 for dads, £5 for kids. Third round against Leighton Orient, you got 38,000.
Yeah.
They had to lock it at 38,000 because the police said, well, nobody's bought tickets for this game. They're all turning up. So, you know, we can't let the full 40,000 in.
Yeah.
And as a lad, I had to queue up. I wasn't a season ticket holder. I had to queue up at the park end to get my ticket. And there was a lad in front of me. He was about 5 or 6. He was really excited. I said to his dad, why is he so excited? His first game, he said, I can't afford to go to a game. He said, let alone bring him. £10 for me, £5. Can't not go.
Yeah.
And that lad saw his first game.
That's right, that's what we... That's
and,
what, that's,
you know, that yeah. lad will be committed then. Well, that's maybe right. not. Maybe it takes 2 or 3 games, but...
No, that's right. The kids
he'll
are,
come back.
The kids aren't getting in. I mean, I taught kids who were 14, 15, 16 who said they were Evertonians, but they'd never been to Goodison.
No, it's a shame, isn't it?
Because their dads, I mean, knows he's not high in employment. He's high in employment. And what I taught was pretty... poor kids, you know, and they were struggling. And so when the school used to say £10, and sometimes I had to say, we take that school funds. That lad, his dad, not worth it. Just put him on, have a quiet word, just take it for nothing, you know. Really great. And the kids, they are so appreciative, you know. As you said, they go into a match.
Yeah. So if they did the ground up, fine, but they'd have to price it right, I think.
Mm.
But I think they would. I still think... It amazes me after years and years of Liverpool dominating that Everton's still got the following they have.
Mm. I know. It's a family thing, isn't it?
It should not. By now, the law of averages would say that Everton crowds would be down to 10,000 and Liverpool would be like 60, 70.
I know.
But it still stands up.
I know it does.
And it, but it won't forever.
No.
It won't forever because A, you've got to win something, and B, because Sky's taking, you know, there's probably people now in Liverpool following Man United. Believe it or not.
Well, believe it. I know there are.
So they've got to work on it, and the way to work on it is you've got to get people in, get prices down. A new ground. Well, I don't know. I'd like them to develop Everton, but your idea of going down, could they? Because that wouldn't. If you go down, wouldn't the pitches be too narrow? You'd have to.
I don't know how you do it. I'm not an architect. You know what I mean? I know what you mean.
You go down, the shorter the wider.
I know what you mean. I'm just wondering if they could go down fully, just keep going down. But you'd have a very steep sided thing. But that, I think the San Siro's fairly steep, isn't it?
Well, if you've ever been to the Nou Camp in Barcelona,
no.
go outside, you just see these stands, you think, well, that's never going to hold 80,000. You go in and you go down by the same amount that the stands go up. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I've never been abroad. I've never even been to Barcelona. I've been abroad, I've not been to football. And Barcelona's one place I think I'll go this year. Everybody said you've got to go to Barcelona.
You've got to go to Barcelona.
Apparently it's a big, great
it
city.
It's a fantastic city, yeah.
Everybody says you've got to see, and it's dirt cheap from here, isn't it?
And if you go for a couple of days, just go on the city tour, on the bus, going around, stopping off at the various places, you can see the Nou Camp.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get in for, I got it very cheap.
I would go in. Yeah. If you're going on, have a few days, you've got to spend
You can't just go for the football, you have to do some of the other cultural stuff.
I would go, not for the football. I mean, this time of year, I can get flights all over the place for nothing, you know. And then being retired, you can just. And there's a few of us who are retired. I can usually find somebody to say, "I'll come here," you know.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. I'll give Max a ring anyway, because otherwise, he'll think I've been talking for that.
Well, look, it's good. I mean, the thing is, you got a script, and then you were saying things like out of order, which is the way every conversation is going to go. And then I'm thinking, have I asked that? And that's when I started getting nervous. Think, have I missed something obvious here? I didn't want to shuffle my paper.
I didn't
want to clear my throat.
I found it very hard not to join in, though, because Kevin, who I interviewed, is a lifelong Evertonian.
Yeah.
And he was saying things, and I wanted to have a conversation, you know. But I didn't ask him about the show ground and that. I never got around to it.
I missed one out, which was did you watch the World Cup matches in 66? But I'm not certain that had any relevance to that.
No, I did, but it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
I mean, I went not because he was in Goodison, because he was here, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, so North Korea and Portugal or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, we got a lift off this woman. We hitched. I was 21. Turned 19. We hitched from St Helens to Goodison, and coming back we came out.
Yeah.
And we were hitching, and in those days it was safe. Yeah. This woman pulls up, and we get into a skirt stiff. She said, "You're nice boys, aren't you?" We're saying, "Yeah." And I said, "I know your face."
Yeah.
She said, "Yeah, but you are not. I've got a son." I said, "We're nice. We're not going to do anything." Just, it was Elsie Tanner, Pat Phoenix.
What?
Yeah, I don't know what she was doing in Liverpool.
I should have said that.
No, bugger. It's a daft story, anyway. No, it's not one of these stories
The one I remember, the particular set of circumstances I remember, I must have been about 15 and the bus strike was on.
Oh, yeah.
And for about 8 weeks, everybody walked to the match or got whatever means of travel. I mean, I used to travel from Ellesmere Port, so I'd get the ferry and then walk from the pierhead, walk back again afterwards, and there were flatbed trucks coming with like loads of people on the back. It was like the army. It was moving, but we still got about 38,000, 40,000.
It's Brian here. I've shut up at last. Hey? Yeah, I'll finish. Shut up at last. Yeah. Okay, Max. Yeah, I don't remember that. What year was that?
68, I think it was.
I'd be in Dundee. That's why. Yeah. I was in Dundee, Scotland. I was in Dundee and all that sort of stuff.
8 week bus strike.
Bloody hell. I'd be out. Yeah. I would be up in Standoos, stroke Dundee, stroke, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd have missed that completely. I didn't come home much in those days. I just.
The question I asked you about what unusual way you'd try to get the result and whatever, from personal experience, because I lived in Germany for 2 years. You couldn't get Everton telly. I used to wait for my dad to send me the pink on the weekend, so it arrived on Monday. I think I was going to last till Monday without a score, so I bought myself a shortwave radio, listened to World Service.
Bloody hell.
And it was fading in and out, but I'd get the score.
Yeah.
I knew
what
the score was.
That's good, isn't it?
But I couldn't go anywhere on a Saturday, so I was stuck in Germany listening to the bloody shortwave radio game. And, you know, and ringing home especially to get the result.
What were you doing in Germany?
I work for a company out there. I work as a translator. Actually.
What was it like? You speak German,
yeah? Yeah, I did. Yeah, a long time ago. Well, I probably still could if I put my mind to it, but that's 30 years ago now.
No, I mean, nowadays it's the internet.
Well, nowadays radio. You just log on and send someone an email, get a text. There's so many different.
My mate is paying Nazi Dermot. He keeps texting me from Daddy Street. Tremendous match, 2-1. And I know it is because, but that means he's got a text in bags of thanks.
Yeah.
No, it's. I don't think the match experience has changed, though. I think it's still.
I still enjoy it.
I still enjoy it
as much as I ever did.
Yeah.
But it is different. I mean, you mentioned it, again, I asked you about it, but I knew the letters on the side, the Bollings Road and the Goodison Road. Yeah. Yeah. That was it. You're looking A21, B12. No, I get a text off my mate who's a Bolton fan, whatever he is. I know what the score is.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know them all, but.
That's a bit that's changed.
Put it on the board.
I think nowadays it's saturated with football, aren't you?
I've not lost my passion for Everton, but I do lose my passion for football sometimes. I don't watch every game.
Well, I must admit, was it last night, Leon?
No, I did watch that.
Who won? Who won?
It was 1-0 for Bayern.
Was it?
I was just sat in the pub.
I didn't watch it on Wednesday night. But I'm a bit like you. Because there was so few little football, anything came on, you watched. Yeah. Now I think, I can't be bothered watching that.
Well, that's right. There was match of the day.
Yeah.
And then there was an ITV highlights programme on Granada.
What was that called?
Granada match or something.
Something like that.
And that was it.
I know.
And even the match of the day started off as one match, then it became two. But the second match was like a handheld camera.
That's right.
That was your dose of football.
We've finished, but I mean,
still
no.
No.
We hope not.
Is it?